This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the W12 podcast. I'm Ben Platt. Thank you for tuning in and listening. If you didn't know, we're a podcast that talk everything Queen's Park Rangers Football Club. Hope you had a great Easter. I'm sure that you did, considering the QPR results, which we will get through. I think that's probably the happiest I've probably ever done an intro like that. I don't know. It felt like it anyway, probably because of our results. But lots I want to get through today. Obviously, I want to get through the Birmingham and the Swansea game. I want to talk Steve Cook. I want to talk the Irish Cafu. I want to talk Hayden's quotes. I want an interesting conversation on Willick's contract. I had an interesting conversation with someone, QPR fan, yesterday that I wanted to bring to the pod and discussion. Strikers. Maybe only the negative part of this pod, but we'll save that to the end, maybe. So lots to get through. On the pod, as normal, a couple of wins and the usual boys are on. They can find some time then, can't we, boys? So we've got Duncan McCready, Jack Supple and Chris Hermitage. Lads, all good, I hope?
Buzzing. Very good, mate.
Yeah. A lot of smiley faces.
How often do we see the screen and we're all sat here like moping around, just like, yeah, let's just get it done. So, like today, we'll be like, yes, can't wait for the pod tonight. Let's get it sorted. What's the agenda? Can't wait.
I know. No one's asked me for an agenda for months, and everyone wants to know. Jack, you okay, mate? Enjoyed the victories?
Yeah, mate, walking on air. I can't believe it. I did not foresee two wins from two over Easter. I mean, that's fantastic. So, yeah, I'm buzzing, mate. How are you?
Yes, very well, very well. Chris, we'll start with you, mate. We'll reflect on Birmingham first. Obviously, you were there. So, how was the game? What was your take? Obviously, a great result.
I mean, yeah, I think every QPR fan that was there they won't forget that. That is going to be one of the most memorable goals moments of many a season. I was so annoyed we missed the Dom Ball goal, the last minute left foot strike against Cardiff during COVID, and come back to that goal so often. But Dunn's was better because it was so unexpected. Left foot volley from your centre-back playing right back in absolute perfect time. Just a moment where no fan can, I guess, sort of celebrate normally, just complete release of emotion and you can't believe what's going on. I don't think we've actually played that well. Ultimately, it doesn't matter. But then all of our number 10s had a great opportunity. So like Anderson had a great one in the first half, like good ball from Chair, chest it down. He sort of panicked over the finish, put it over the bar. Chair had an effort where it felt like he was definitely going to get a volley on target, completely slices it. Willock has a moment where, well, about 8 yards out, he's just tried to smash it, goes well over the bar, and you think, is this our day? Because we weren't peppering Ruddy a lot. Most of these efforts are obviously going over or going wide. And then, yeah, an absolute complete moment of magic that must have been biggest boost to the entire squad, club, fans, anybody connected to UPR. And that gives you such a boost going into the game yesterday.
Yeah, I agree, Chris. I don't think it really matters at the moment how you play to a degree, because you just need to get the points on the board, don't you? And you just need to get yourself away. I mean, you know, we'll talk about Swansea in a minute, but we wasn't great in the second half there. I don't think we were particularly great until the goal again versus Birmingham. Jimmy Dunn, what a goal. Unbelievable. I mean, it didn't even make the top five EFL goals. What's that about?
Absolute joke, that was.
Media bias, that.
Yeah.
And by the way, Jimmy Dunn, we'll just float everywhere as we go through the pod, but he's just been outstanding. Like, I can't even describe. He was even great on Tuesday. He was good before the goal. Like, the goal was just an icing on the cake, really, for another good performance. He was good yesterday. Is it me? He seems to get a little bit faster. I don't know. What's...
Well, that's confidence. That's that belief that he's got. Like, he's had such a redemption arc from, like, where he was under Ainsworth. And we were like, Ben especially, sell him get rid of him in the summer, let him go, don't want him back ever. Like, now, he's up there as our starting right back. You wouldn't drop him for Cannon at all, even if Cannon's super fit and performing in training. He's been phenomenal. I mean, he was a bit ropey the first game at Bristol City at right back, but kind of since he's grown into it from there, he hasn't looked back.
We were talking to Dunk a couple of days after this one's game, sorry, and we were talking about the four centre backs. It's a very modern way of playing at the moment. Like, Man City do it, Arsenal do it. I just wonder whether there's something in there. He was very, very complimentary of Fox after the Swansea game, very complimentary of Dunn, you know, rightly so after the Birmingham game. I just wonder whether we're going to see that being the back four for the next couple of weeks. Because you mentioned that Kenneth Powell wouldn't have played anyway, even if he wasn't ill. And I just wonder, Jack, anything to add on Birmingham, and I just wonder whether that might be how we go, especially at Sheffield Wednesday, a lot of balls in the box, I can imagine.
You're right. It's definitely a trend. It's definitely in vogue, isn't it? Having, you know, at least three centre backs across a back four in a flat back four. I think what it does, it gives you such an advantage when you target your sort of goal kicks to that sort of side. I don't think I've seen Dunn lose a header eight or nine games, however many it is, where he's played right back. He seems to win absolutely everything. I said before, the pod, the way he challenges for the ball up in the air and wins it, it's like peak Andy Carroll, like how dominant he used to be, you know, coming, you know, attacking the ball like that. And it's just such an advantage. And the confidence he's playing with, he's always been fairly two-footed, because even when he's played in the back three, I think there was at times in the Warburton, he might have played on the left side, at, you know, periods to sort of, so Dickie could play on the right and then, you know, whatever, but he did play in the middle as well. But he's been versatile enough to play all across that sort of back line. And because of his two-footedness, it's also a bit confusing for, you know, defenders, because a couple of times he's cut back in on his left. He's done that, you know, that Ronaldo chop almost, and he's got a decent ball in. And just the composure on the ball in the final third, like the run he had, I know it's jumping forward slightly, but against Swansea, and was it in the first half? And he kind of just ran the length of the pitch with the ball, only to sort of like bundle it out just at the end when he tried to get across him. I was just shouting, go on, Jimmy, you know, the whole time, because it was just, you're rooting for him. And it's such a great redemption arc. He's such a, you know, from what everyone says, seems like a really great bloke, cares about the club, you know, really down to earth. And I don't know how many times I've watched that Birmingham goal from all the different angles, but I'm still not bored. I think I went back to it even after the Swansea game. But unbelievable moment, and incredibly envious of all those in the ground at the time for that. I just wonder on how, you know, the limbs, as they say, what that was like in the ground. Must have been absolutely incredible. But when Jimmy Dunn scores for QPR, we win. So it's the sixth game he's scored in for QPR. We've won all of them. First time he scored since Preston, December 2022. And another little thing that sort of, you know, turned around at the right time, when we've conceded the first goal, in the last three occasions, we've won two, come back to win two of those three games. And we went for a long period where we conceded the first goal, we wouldn't win. We went winless in 37 league games where we conceded first before this little run. So I know it was Rotherham and Birmingham that we won against, not the best opposition, but we still had to do it. And I was incredibly impressed by the character at, you know, in that Birmingham game to come back so quickly, because they could have moped, they could have sunk. And we've seen that this season where they've gone into their shells. And we've said before on previous podcasts, you know, they've got no chin, this lot. When they take a setback, they will, but they're certainly not doing that now. And I think the additions of some of the January players have really helped the squad.
Yeah, absolutely agree. I think that I was obviously fearing the worst when Bakuna, who I thought had a really good game actually for Birmingham. He was probably the best player on the pitch on the day. Slotted in. His goal was actually really good. I watched that again the other day. It curled right round Clark Sutton to the top corner. I feared the worst because I thought Birmingham would just 11 men behind the ball. But when you score so early, straight after the goal, you don't really give them an opportunity to do that. So, and obviously Steve Cook, I think he's my favourite player at the moment. I think he might be a lot of people's, but I was thinking about this yesterday. I don't think I've liked a centre-back, maybe even defender, since Clint Hill as much as probably I liked Steve Cook. I don't know what it is. It's just everything that it's not just his defending, which has been great, but it's just the way he carries himself and the way he talks as well. I like the way he talks and he's a leader, isn't he? And I think when Begovic moves on in the summer, I don't think there'd be anyone better suited to take the captain of next season than Cook, assuming he's still here, which I think he will be. I'm surprised he scored the two goals, like it's two goals now, but it is a bit crazy. It shows how bad we were. One thing I completely agree with, which I just want to quickly go back to, is the Jimmy Dunn effectiveness in the box, in the opposition's box, and what he's done. I think that's the third corner in a third set piece now that he's won a header and we've gone on to score in the last couple of games, I believe. And like you say, when we do the diagonals or Begovic hits him, he just never loses it, does he? It's because it's always up against centre midfielder, right back, right midfielder. It's just never going to beat him in the air, are they? So that's a huge advantage that I think that we've... because that's what started the goal in the first place, right? Begovic, header on. But it's Steve Cook. What a ledge. Don't.
See, I'm more going towards Jake Clark-Salter being my favourite player. Like, he's just a Rolls. Rolls, like, actually, they complement each other so perfectly, don't they, Cook and Clark-Salter? It's like Clark-Salter is that silky, get him on the ball, he's going to play a pass. But Cook's just that, you don't want to mess with him. He's that bigger, stronger, doesn't lose anything in the air. Like, when we had such a good centre-back pairing, like, go back to, like, through the years, like, who was the last ones where you say...
Anur and Dunn.
Anur and Dunn, yeah. But that's kind of like a similar kind of... Anur was a bit better, like, on the ball, carried it out. Dunn was just old school, taking no nonsense, puts his head on everything. And that's all you want as a fan, is those kind of centre-back pairings. Like,
I don't think see him talk.
Better in the league.
I don't ever see him talk, though. I noticed it. I was watching him. They don't talk to each other. Not that they don't. I didn't see them. I was watching to see if they do it. They don't. It's weird. It must be some sort of, like you say, some sort of telepathic centre-back. They're very right and left, aren't they?
They've just clicked and gelled, haven't they? I think it was telling us all, like, how on the ball Jake Clark-Salter is with, like, his defensive awareness, like against Swansea. There's a ball that went through and he's kind of like goes to shield it, thinking Begovic is going to come out and claim it, and he doesn't. And like within like milliseconds, he's not coming, I'm getting rid of it. Like, he's just that quick awareness of like reading that danger.
And they both read the game very well. Yeah. And actually, I think you're slightly harsh on Cook. I think he's very good on the ball. I think Cook's actually quite adept at bringing it down, calming it down, you know, hitting a ball through. I think Clark Salt was the better at finding the pass in the hole, like unlocking it into the midfield. But Cook's got decent passing range on him, I think, as well. And I don't know, are either that quick? I mean, Cook's certainly not. Clark Salter doesn't look like he's the quickest, but he I've seen him a few times in the last few games, getting back and then making that run across a defender to cut it out, and made a couple of really great like last ditch tackles. And yeah, I'm with you, Dunk. I think, you know, Clark Salter is an absolute Rolls Royce of a player. We needed him to get fit, and you know, he's having such a good run of form, you know, in terms of staying in the team as well. He's been absolutely player of the year contender for me.
I think he's so difficult to get round, but he doesn't look like he is. But I think if you're an attacker or a winger running against him, you almost have given up so early on. You're like, oh, I'm not going to be able to. Whereas it felt like against Dickey, for example, that was easier to do.
You love the shirt.
Yeah.
Well, you never bully. I never see him get bullied. That's what I like about him the most. You can't bully Jake Salter. He won't let you do it. Same with Cook as well, to a degree. Whereas Dickey and Dunn were getting bullied some games by strikers last year, and you know they would get, and they were panicking because they were losing. Do you know what I mean? But these two, they're just so composed. And like I said, Jake Clark, so just, I like the way his attitude is on the pitch. You know, where he's just always moaning. He's always like, he's always, do you know what I mean? He's always the ref's ear. And I can imagine as a striker, he's not going to be the easiest to play against. Sorry, Chris.
I think that's a very good kind of description. And I guess this is what, because fans kind of, they were dubious on him, right? Because obviously he was injured a lot. It felt like he'd come back, then get injured very quickly. Doesn't help that we were in an awful period of form when a lot of that was happening with so many different managers and all the issues. So fans get annoyed about, well, most things. So that was something. But we've seen that, yeah, the quality really is there. And I think it's so key for centre-backs. If you know who you're playing with every single week, kind of on both sides, so not just that partnership, but the entire back four, you two are set. You kind of, we went through this period where it was like, okay, Dunn was covering so much for Dickey, then Dunn's form collapsed because Dickey was having an absolute mare. These two kind of know, touch wood, the bloke next to him is going to have a 7 out of 10, at least. So that gives you so much confidence. It's great to see the stats all back this up in terms of how good we are defensively since the Fuentes has come in. I think we're only second to Leeds in terms of XGC from open play. It is ridiculous. We face the second fewest shots inside the box, second fewest big chances conceded. This is like a defence that must have been about 24th in all these metrics for half the season.
You think where he took the team over from as well, and he got that out of that squad.
Yeah.
But I think like that's telling as well, is it? We, like, especially under Ainsworth at that time, we were saying how disconnected we were with this squad, how there was no players that we felt like even cared about. Like, they didn't care about the club. We didn't really have that kind of, oh, do you know what, I like going to watch it just because they're playing. We know they're going to give like 9 out of 10 every week. Whereas now, like, the whole squad, like, everyone's in love with Jimmy Dunn again. Like, Marty's just completely and utterly made everyone realise these players weren't awful. They've just had their confidence was in their boots. And we as fans can now see, actually, they are trying. They do care. And that's, like, showing on the field as well with the performances and the results. And that gets everyone back in love with the club and back in love with the players. Like QPR Twitter recently has been really positive, which is a rarity.
I think you've got to get on side with the manager, haven't you? Like, and I think that's what, you know, other managers historically, you know, Ainsworth, you know, Critchley, building it, didn't he? Like, if you can get the players on board and I guess to kind of earn it a little bit, which Marty's done, hasn't he? I'd imagine that the players were quite dubious when he came in, like, but what he's done and how he set us up and the wins we've done, I think the players are now fully on board. And I think he's the boss, isn't he? You know, what he says, you know, he, right at the start when he was taken off, dropping Willick and Chair, he's done it, you know, recently with Chair. It sends a statement, doesn't it? You know, he's not afraid to make a change. He's not afraid to put someone or take someone off. I mean, we could talk wax lyricals about Marty all day, couldn't we, I suppose? But is there any observations on the Birmingham game? Anyone wanted to call out?
I mean, you have touched upon it, but and this is talking about an opposition player, but yeah, I thought Bakuna was, he was excellent. He was the best player on the pitch.
Yeah.
He first half, we let him get in so much space, kind of behind Hayden and Field. He was picking up pockets all the time. The goal comes because we're not tight enough on him, letting him get into space. And yeah, we didn't feel like we ever changed it enough to kind of stop him dictating a lot of stuff. Obviously, in the end, it's fine. It's worked out. But that was... and we're going to have... I guess we're going to have games and moments like that, right? We aren't Leeds. We aren't the best team in the league who can stop everyone's key opposition player every single game. But, yeah, I think it's probably something they might possibly look at the end of the season and go, okay, if that kind of thing happens again, we need to be able to stop that, because it could have easily hurt us. We got back into the game at the perfect time, like 3 minutes later.
Yeah.
We didn't let them. And that was incredibly key, because if we'd been trailing by 80, it would have, I mean, we could be sitting here in very different moods and different position, right?
Just a couple of other observations I had was I didn't think Anderson had the greatest of games. I actually don't think, and we'll talk about it later, I'm not too sure any of the attacking players had a particularly great weekend. I don't know. I don't think any of them have stood out. I think our defenders have been excellent. I think Hayden Field was excellent. Colback has been good. I think these are the players that have really stood out. It might be being slightly harsh on a couple of them. I thought Smith did okay yesterday, but yeah, I thought Anderson, it just wasn't working for him, was it? I'm not too sure.
He hit the bar.
Why that was. He hit the bar, but but he should have rescored it.
There were a couple, weren't there, where Anderson, first half, chair, potentially. Yeah, I definitely take your point there. I think it was an off day for the front players. I mean, I don't want to pick on him too much, but Frey didn't look up to the level in that game. Falling over a lot. Wasn't really keeping hold of the ball like he had done in some other appearances where he looked a fairly useful target. So interesting to see how his QPR develops. If it, if he can turn it around. I mean, Jimmy Dunn's taught us not to write anyone off just yet.
I'm going to write him off. But anyway, am I being slightly... I get Chris's point, actually, around... we turned it around, which was fine, but I sometimes find we're a bit predictable at home. I was sort of saying that during the game. I don't know. When we play with like a Frey or a Dykes, it's kind of... And the Willock chair, Anderson, kind of works away from home, doesn't it? I don't know. I might be being harsh, but I thought Middlesbrough worked us out pretty quickly when we lost to them and changed it. Second half, they overran us completely. They stepped up a little bit, got on us, and we struggled a little bit. And I thought Birmingham did the same for the first 15, 20 minutes that second half. And I know we got the goal, which changed it. Well, had it been another 10 minutes gone, 15 minutes gone, it might have been a completely different story. I just wonder whether Saturday we need to have a look at changing it a little bit. I don't know what that is, by the way, because we don't have a lot of options. So I get that, but I just wonder what that is. I don't know what, but I don't know whether that works at home.
I think the problem is, especially if it's Wednesday, I can imagine they're going to come and sit in. So it's just not the game for Sinks, is it? Like, he's not going to be able to have any space to really get into. And you would imagine we're going to have more of the ball, which then... But I think that's the problem with against Birmingham. I didn't feel like we had a lot of the ball, like, control-wise. It was like, we're not dominating the ball and then dominating their half. And that's when Frey, possibly even Dykes, would be more useful. Whereas it was semi-stretched, but we didn't have Sinks on to stretch it. And we were playing balls down the line for Frey. He was never going to get anywhere near. And it just felt like it's a bit disjointed, those attacking three midfielders with whoever plays as our lone striker at the minute. There just seems to be no correlation. They're not gelling. But then Marty's swapping and changing it a lot. So you just don't know, are they just not getting into a groove or a rhythm with who's up top?
I mean, we'll talk about the strikers in a bit because I want to have a proper conversation on it. But let's move on to Swansea yesterday. Great result. Bit of a smash and grab. I can kind of, wasn't the total smash and grab, but I thought second half we were particularly poor. Still okay defensively, but they did create a few good chances and they kind of, I mean, they hit the bar twice, but one was a free kick and one was a fluke cross. So, but Begovic, when called upon, did what he needed to do, which was great. We knew, we said that in the last couple of pods, we would need him at some point. And he delivered yesterday. But Chris, a great result. And we'll take it.
Yeah, I think it kind of felt like a sort of traditional championship match at this point of the season, really. Like, very tight margins. They feel aggrieved. We created a decent amount in the first half. For the first 20 minutes, we were fairly decent. Our chair hasn't managed to kind of put his chance away. That I think he does a lot of the right things, takes his time, composed himself, and then I think maybe put that down to a guy got on the line very well. But if that was Dykes, would I be more critical? Yeah, probably. You mentioned it earlier. I thought Smith was decent first half. It was kind of the key one to get in there, balls into the box. But we said this on our chat. He was putting the ball in the same place every single time. And if Dykes doesn't work that out, I don't know what to say. Like, it's kind of so obvious where Smith was putting the ball, near post every time. I've actually gone back and looked at the highlights and just watched Dykes' runs. He knows where to go. He's just moving so slowly in terms of dragging him to the back post, then getting front post. It's too late by then. Like, it's got to be so much quicker and sharper, or you're going, right, I'm not gonna drag you away. I'm literally darting in at near post every single time. And obviously did it early on when we won that corner where it felt like Dyke's got the initial touch that just went past the post. But yeah, a very, very tight game. If they'd scored first, I don't think we would have scored. But we scored, did enough to hang on. They didn't. I don't know whether you boys, did you really think Swansea were going to score when we were one up?
You know what? I was quite relaxed with like the sort of the organisational like prowess of the team. You know, the way they sort of set themselves up. Yeah, there was a couple of moments where it was Cooper had a shot inside the box. He was free and he kind of didn't really get much on it. And Begovic made a save down to his right. But I was quite relaxed. It wasn't like the Leicester, you know, game where you really like, oh, Christ, you know, can we hold on, you know, away at Leicester? This one, I felt a bit more confident that we could see it through. And, you know, when I saw Fox in the starting lineup, I was a little bit nervous, a little bit worried because he's not played for a while. And he's as an out-and-out fullback as well, up against sort of Swansea's decent wide men and their fullbacks. But Swansea's fullbacks were excellent in the game, the way they sort of interchange with the wingers and the midfielders and getting the overlaps and underlaps and some Timon, Anki got some really good balls in. So Cook and Clark Salter in the first half especially were really busy, sort of clearing their lines. I thought, again, I agree with you, Chris, I thought Smith looked like really bright. Switched off a few times defensively, but going forward, he looked, you know, really useful, put some good near post balls in. I take your point on Dykes. I don't think he's got it. I don't think he's going to ever. It's not gonna, the penny would have dropped by now. But you know, we'll see what we do on Sheffield Wednesday. But it was our first win on April Fool's Day since 2002, when we won 3-2 against Notts County, and our first away win on April Fool's Day since 1995 under Ray Wilkins, a 1-0 win at Coventry with Trevor Sinclair scoring. I think, you know, Steve Cook as well hasn't scored for years and years. I think it was 2019, his last goal, before scoring in back-to-back games, which is unbelievable. And something that Steve Cook has in common with Luke Amos and Idrissa Silla, they've both scored on Good Friday and Easter Monday in the same season. Great. And, you know, looking at it as well, you know, it's just two defeats in our last 13 games. There's only a couple of teams with a better run of form or more points accrued in that period. 7 wins, 4 draws. We've won 38 points in 26 league games under Cifuentes, which is now twice as many as we'd won under Ainsworth in his brief stint in 2023 and in a game fewer as well. And then I think Chris touched on it as well about the defence, talking about the XG and the shots faced and just, you know, the overall goals conceded. It is only Leeds that conceded fewer than QPR in the Championship since Cifuentes' first game. And when you look at just the away games as well, you know, 9 goals conceded in 12 away games, 5 clean sheets. That is outrageous. We've won 4 of our last 6 away from home. It's just, it really is fantastic. You know, what he's done to this team, the organisation, the belief the players have got, this, you know, the redemption stories of certain players. And I think, you know, looking at it as well, we were like, God, we won 2 games over Easter. The last time we won twice in an Easter weekend, so if you want to include Friday through to Monday, 2006-07 under John Gregory. We won 1-0 v Coventry on the Saturday and 3-2 versus Luton on the Easter Monday. And also in that season, I think we're in a bit of a dogfight as well. And it was a good run of form towards the end of the season that sort of got us up and into safety under Gregory after a really dodgy mid-season slump. So, I mean, we're not home and hosed yet, but, you know, 6 points clear, was 6 games to go, you would have taken that, wouldn't you?
What I like, what Swansea did a lot, I thought, they put a lot of balls in the box. I wasn't really expecting that. Obviously, Marty was, because he mentioned it in his post-match. That's why he played Fox, because he knew they were going to put lots of balls in the box. And as you said, they were good, the wide players, and they did put the ball in the box a lot. But actually, that's absolutely fine for us. And when you talk about comfortable, they brought on 2 little young, nippy lads. And when that came on, I kind of thought that was okay for us because we were sat quite deep anyway. So I kind of, with the balls that were coming in the box, which is what we tried to do, didn't we? We tried to put them out. But yeah, I thought pretty comfortable. You never really know, do you? Like I said, that court, you know, he takes that cross to go in and you, it's frustrating, isn't it? But again, yeah, defending, again, though, and we'll mention it, attacking-wise, striker-wise, it's frustrating at times watching us when we go forward. We do create, but we're not very composed when we do get there. It's a bit frustrating, Doug, don't know.
You hit like the nail on the head in our group chat when you said it's like we're playing with 10 men sometimes of our strikers, just of how ineffective they are in like all aspects of the game. Like, I felt Sinks was really poor when he came on against Swansea. I don't think he just didn't seem his normal self. Like, he didn't seem that he wanted to make those darting runs down the channels. He didn't really want to, like, I don't know, just felt like he just wasn't bothered. Like, he'd had enough. Like, I don't know, and then Frey came on and, like, what, fell over within about 5 seconds of coming on. It's just embarrassing. Like,
he was bad, right? And everyone was laughing, all the Swansea fans and all that. Like, I get it, right? He doesn't look... But he come on as a number 10, which I thought was slightly... I get it why, I suspect, because set pieces and stuff, and maybe get him in the box and he can head some... I kind of get it. And he's obviously more disciplined than Sinks is. You wouldn't put him in a number 10, so I kind of get it. But it was kind of a bit unfair on him, wasn't it? Because he was running around that middle of the park. He didn't have a clue what he was doing.
It's just like, I just feel like there's just something not clicking with the strikers. I know we're going to discuss it in a minute, but it's just something not clicking there.
You can do it now, mate. You kick us off, mate.
Well, I think if you merged all three of our strikers together, you'd have a decent championship level striker. And that's worrying, that we have to merge all three of them together to make one decent striker.
I'm still not sure you would.
Well, that's the other issue. Like, as much as I want Sinks to do well, I don't see he's going to be our next big money like sale. I just don't see any club coming in offering any kind of silly money for him. Like, he lacks so much. Yes, he's got that pace. Yes, he's still raw. But I just feel like he doesn't read the game as well as other strikers do. Obviously, like Dykes, his form's fallen off a cliff. Like, when we signed him, first of all, I thought, finally we're getting us, we signed a striker, no more loans, finally so we can get behind, and it just hasn't worked out for him. And Frey, I just don't know what he offers. I feel like he's got that, like, a positional awareness in the box, but that's about it. Like, I just honestly, I don't know who to start up top week from game to game.
There was one point yesterday when it was late on in the game and we were killing time. We were keeping the ball really well, like in the final third and bringing it out into kind of middle third back in. Very, very good play. Everyone, like, really technical. Pass the ball to Frey. Absolute shocking touch. 5 yards. Gone. And we lost it. And they countered. They didn't do anything. But that, to me, was the point. I was like, this is silly. Because Bristol City game was a similar element where we had that unbelievable team move. He had the easiest 1-2 ever with Willock. If he touches it off a yard, Willock strokes that in the bottom corner. Yeah. And if he can't do that, then yeah, then I'm just like, oh, I might have to give up, because we have the technical players. All they are asking for is someone to bounce the ball off, basically. Be there, because I need to beat this player with two passes and I'm in. And that is the striker we need for those three, for the majority of games. Yeah, we're going to need... I think it is actually useful having three kind of different styles of striker that gives us flexibility. There's going to be some games where one works and one doesn't. But yeah, we're kind of getting through at the moment, aren't we? But as ever, it would be great if all of them could get at least one goal each before the end of the season, just to give us something or themselves something. Because yeah, we're still going to need one of them to get only 10. We're not talking about 20, 15 goals next season. One to get 10, because I feel it can be supplemented with the others. But you wouldn't back that, unless one of them was really good at penalties and could get like 4 penalties in a season. Then maybe.
I'm starting to wonder with Armstrong if he is better suited to playing out wide. I'm not sort of calling him an out-and-out winger, but one of those sort of modern forwards that come in off the flank, or, you know, they get down the byline and get a ball in. I mean, you know, the sort of cutback, not like your traditional cross, because Armstrong's shown a few times this season, he's got down the right-hand side and cut it back, showing a little bit of composure. But then also against, I think, Ipswich at home, he showed, you know, on a few lung-busting runs where he got down the left-hand side and cut in, and yeah, it was a couple of poor decisions. But he's got the assets to sort of, you know, and the pace to do that. I'm not seeing it down the middle. I'm not seeing the hold-up play developing as it has developed, but it's still way off. I think he's not charging around as much in away games. I wonder if that's a direction from the manager to sort of like preserve your energy, sort of like keep yourself in the game, you know, blow yourself out of it. I don't know. I think there's a long way to go with him. But he's shown enough for me to want to keep him in around the squad next season. I'm just not sure in his best position across the front three. Dykes, I'm struggling really badly to sort of figure out what he brings to the team, because he's not really linking the play. He's not really getting in behind too often. When a chance comes his way in the box, invariably he's missing it.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
Picture the scene. All of your mates around, you've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
And then he's not making the runs when the balls are coming in the box. He's not getting across the near post. And he's not getting to the back post. He's just sort of in the middle, just watching it. So I don't know. This sort of amalgamation of all three strikers to get one striker, I'm not sure what Dykes brings to the table there at all. Frey... Yeah, I kind of agree with the consensus here. It's you're starting to think that, you know, maybe a really good pre-season and there might be something there. There might be an option off the bench, you know, a target man sort of get in the box and he's slinging some crosses in Matt Smith style. But right now, I mean, he works hard and he's running around, but yeah, I'm not seeing much quality there. I'm not seeing much link-up play. Keeps losing the ball in silly places, puts us under pressure. So yeah, it's a real problem. But I mean, I just wanted to also say something about Begovic. We kind of bit critical of him in recent weeks, and some of it just, some of it maybe, you know, we're just maybe overcritical potentially. But I thought he was brilliant against Swansea. But he made some really good saves, pretty good commanding presence from crosses, claimed a lot of balls. Yeah, couldn't fault him. I thought he had a really good game. Kind of answer that question. He stepped up when we needed him to step up in key moments, but hopefully he can continue that to the end of the season. But I think we need a bit of a clear out on the striker front in the summer. If we are in the Championship and also we've got the budget to do so, I'm not sure. I'd keep Armstrong for the potential, but Frey and Dykes, wouldn't be sad to see either go.
I think they're the two positions, Jack, that we need. The summer is going to be, should be our main focus as a goalie, because I don't think Begovic will be staying, and we need two or three strikers. On just a couple of points, I'm not sure Sinclair can play wing. If you look at what Willock and Chair have to do and Smith have to do, they have to get back, right? Under it, Marty, I don't think he's disciplined enough to be able to do that. That's why we probably never seen him there, because of that reason. You know, when he came on, you could have put him on one of the wings and put Frey up top, and put one of the midfield, no, put someone in the middle, like, you know, your Anderson. We didn't even do that. So I think that will tell you everything you need to know. I think with Sinclair, is what worries me about Sinclair, and I won't talk about it too much because I want to get back to the positive stuff. But I don't like, you mentioned it earlier, Dunk, around, oh, there's no space, so we can't play him. Well, that to me annoys me a little bit. What do you mean you can't? Like, I get that's his strength, but I get that that's what you know. You'd use him when there is space, but when there's no space or a team, what we just can't play him, can't start him. You know, he needs to find a way. It's not like you can't, you know. And even when he is really effective, and he does play every game, and he does start doing week in, week out, teams are going to know that, and they're going to stop giving space, right? So he's going to have to learn it anyway. And it's frustrating that and it might be that he isn't playing every week, and it's difficult for him to get in a rhythm. And it's the same with all three of them, I think. The chopping and changing, I don't think it benefits them in any way. And coming on as number 10, Dyke's playing number 10 for 6 or 7 weeks, and I think that's ruined him, any form that he would have got by Marty. I get why Marty did it, and you know, but I didn't think that helped him. But that's what annoys me about Sinks a little bit. There's got to be more to his game. He's got to find a way. If he's going to progress in this league, he can't just be that player who finds the space in behind. He's got to be a lot more than that.
Do you think he will find that niche that will make him... he doesn't hold it up, does he?
The only thing that Sinks needs now, for me, is a run of games, and I mean a run of games. Martins plays him every week. Doesn't matter who we're playing, right? And he finds his feet or he doesn't, right? Sinks or swims, right? And I don't mean sink as in we have to sell him. What I mean, what he needs is a League One move all season, 6 months, every week with a good team in League One, you know, and let him just flourish down there. We can recall him again in January. But the problem is it's just we'd end up by three strikers possibly. Or it mean keeping Dykes, which to me is just something I really don't think we should do. And I think Dykes, I just think he's gone. He's got into that Dickey space. There's a couple that have fallen into that space where they're just, I think the fans have sort of just had enough, and he's had enough. He looks like he's had enough. And maybe a move is best for him. And he may well turn out and go somewhere else like Millwall and score a few goals and do okay. But I just think if we keep him, he's just going to rot and he's going to get worse and worse and worse to the point where it gets really toxic for him. And I could be, you know, look, I hope he does turn it around. I hope he has a really good end to the season and smashes in 5 or 6 goals. But watching him in these last two games, unless that happens, I can't see him turning the defender and slotting it in or... You know, and Frey, I don't know. I don't want to be too harsh on him, but maybe a pre-season, maybe. But it would have to be some pre-season, I think, to get him up to speed. And we don't. I always think that it might be good if we hit the ball in the box, but I don't think we do that enough, and I don't think we do that accurately enough anyway. I don't know. I could be wrong. I think what we need is a real busy striker, a real busy, always around and moving around and interchanging, can play on the wing. Like that Stanfield, I really liked. I know he may not have the best game against us, but whenever I watch him, he's always busy. He's always here, there, and he's floating through. And you know, that's the type of hybrid striker I think Martin will be looking for in the summer. Someone like that. Not easy to get, are they, strikers? I get it, right? They, you know, but we should be looking now for someone around who can do that.
I felt like Wells,
Stanfield, didn't we?
Wells was a bit like that under Warburton, wasn't he? You think, oh, him up top on his own, is that going to work? But he was busy. He made great runs. He had, you know, really good link with Eze and the like. And I feel like, yeah, a Wells type would probably suit this team quite a lot. I mean, yeah. I was actually thinking, if we are going to play a target man, imagine Hugel, when we had him on loan in this team, would have been perfect for some of the hold up play and the nastiness up front, and just being a sort of 10 to 12 goal season guy. Not the most glamorous of footballers, but then he was Dykes or Frey. Hugel's got a bit more about him than those two. So, you know, you can go either way with this setup. I'm not quite sure what team we're going to be up front. You know, do we want the busy striker that sort of gets in all over the place and pops up, puts defenders under pressure? Or do we want the sort of target man to be the backboard and to sort of, you know, bring us up the pitch and link the play in your sort of Chris Martin mold, obviously a more mobile one? But yeah, it's I think, you know, the goalkeeper and striker, absolutely key, because I feel like we're nailing a lot of the other positions at the moment.
Decent, another winger as well. I think Chris Willock. Chrissy Willock, just quickly, I had a debate with someone yesterday about whether you'd keep him or not. And we had this huge debate, and his view was we shouldn't keep him. We should just let him go, move on. He's been great. He's helped keep us up, but let's just part ways, give him a new contract, and then something happens and he gets into a sulk again. I was sort of saying that he's been great, and if you can get Chrissy Willock on form, he's good as anyone. Just wondered where you lads sit with it. I think we've touched on it a couple of times on the pod, but
can we get someone as good as he is, and that we know he is, for free?
Highly unlikely.
There you go. So that to me is the answer. Then you've already got the person at the club. You just need to try and convince him to stay. And I know we've said this, I don't want to repeat myself too much, but we said this for what feels like months now since he started playing well. He's playing with his best mate. He's playing for a manager who likes the way, and he likes the way he's playing. He plays a lot. Even if he's rested, bench, whatever, he knows either he's getting on or he knows the reasons behind it. This is the kind of team that attacking players want to play in. It just, as ever, will come down to money.
Well, exactly. That's half the point, isn't it? Money. He wants more money to play for us, right? So, and we know he's got a bit of an attitude. By the way, I'm just being devil advocate. If we can re-sign him, we should. But I think if you look at it on the flip side, which people will, he's got a known attitude. We saw it under Ainsworth. We've seen it, on the pitch. I don't know.
Well, obviously, I think with the whole devil's advocate thing, like, he doesn't want to play for Ainsworth, does he? Like, Ainsworth didn't trust him, and he didn't play to Willock's strength at all. Whereas Marty has put an arm around him, said, look, if you go in the summer, you go in the summer. Keep us up, then go. Like, do what you can, get back to playing your best, and then go. But thanks for keeping us up. Appreciate you for that. It's almost, that's what it feels Marty's done. And he said, look, you want to move, you've got to perform for us. There's no way you're going to get a move for better money or to a better club if you're sat on our bench or sat in our under-21s, reserve, B team, whatever, not playing for us because of your attitude. You've got to come out and show potential teams what you can still do and what you still have to offer. And that's what Ainsworth didn't do with him. Ainsworth and him had this fallout for whatever reason, whereas Marty's come in, put an arm around him and given him that, come on, I need you. You need us because you need to play. So let's get the best out of both of us. And
You don't know much water's under the bridge either, do you? That's what I'm saying. I don't know what's happened, where and who with. But
again, you think about all that, like people like Les has left, like Amit's no longer as involved. There's a different hierarchy at the club. So all that water that's under the bridge could well have gone. And he might think there's a new dynamic, there's a new way the club are looking. Like, everything looks positive. We've got, arguably, in my eyes, one of the best managers in the league. Like, as long as we keep Marty in the summer, like, why would you not want to stay and play for him? Like, we're getting the extra Sky money. There could be a bit more wiggle room in the wages. Like, we could offer him that extra couple of grand to get him to stay. Like, if it was me, like Chris says, there's no one else we can get for free that's going to be as good as him. I would be offering him a contract.
Well, there's certainly, I don't know if it's just me noticing it, but on Instagram, like, there's quite a few pictures of the manager and Willock having a laugh on the training ground, hugging at the end of games. So seem like best mates, and you just wonder, is there any being hopeful, is there any foreshadowing there? Maybe, you know, he could be staying, but ultimately I think Willock probably is after the paycheck. Probably he can get a top end championship club, lower Premier League team, but has his form, does it warrant that? Does it even warrant us giving him a big pay increase? I'm not sure. I think economically, like, do we just cut our ties and sort of try and unearth someone else, you know, from the Scandinavian leagues, or, you know, get another Anderson type, you know, there's plenty of players out there. It's just, you know, we've got to recruit well, and it's still too early to say if that's how, if we are going to recruit well overall under the new CEO and the new direction we're going. But the early signs from January were, they were pretty good signings, and the impact they've had. Can we get another Chris Willock in from the lower leagues or from abroad? I think it's unlikely he stays personally. I don't know if he particularly wants to, if we're going to be, you know, sort of a mid-table championship team again. But to know, maybe something special is brewing, and the manager's kind of got in his ear and he's kind of convincing him to lead the charge next season. Who knows? But yeah, a bit of work to do still in this campaign, and I think Willock could do a few more goals and assists before, you know, he starts getting a massive pay rise here.
Would you rather throw money at Willock for wages or use it to bring Hayden in the summer?
I would sign Hayden personally. I think he's been really good. The issue I have with him is just his fitness is still niggling away at me. I still feel like comes off games, he seems to get a lot of knocks. He seems to, I don't know, and he's got a bit of a history with injuries, hasn't he? So I'd be worried about that. But on the pitch, I would 100% sign him. I think he's been great. He shields the defence. I think one reason why we've not conceded as many chances is because of him and his there. And do you know what he's great at? His recovery is so good. It will make a mistake and it will lose it. Nine times out of ten, we'll get it back. He's got those big strides and he just seems to get there. And like I said, experience is something that you can't, the right experience is something that isn't always, do you know what I mean? I would definitely sign him. He's only 29 as well, remember? So he's not as old as maybe people think he is.
It just turned.
Yeah, so I know, Jack, you're a bit sceptical about it.
No, I mean, on the pitch, he's probably been our most impactful signing pound for pound in terms of what he brings to the team and how he had an effect on, you know, sort of the dynamic of it as well. I think he's such a good shield in front of the back four. He is real top-end championship class for that position. I think he's, you know, should be in his prime now as well, and I think those sort of players have a good few years, you know, at this level, that age, going into the 30s. So it really depends on the money, because I'm not saying it's identical, but Stefan Johansson came in on loan. It was really good. We knew he was on a lot of money at Fulham. I don't know if he broke the bank, but we certainly paid him a decent wage to come here as well. And it didn't quite work out how we had hoped overall. And I just, you know, I wonder if we've learnt from those sort of scenarios, but I think, you know, each player is different. You can't be scarred too much by the past, and if you think he's the right player to go with, go for it. But, you know, for me, I'd love for us to sign him permanently on a 2-year deal or something like that. And if he's willing to join, you know, that's a really good foundational piece to building a really competitive team next year.
Chris, what do you think, mate?
I have the same concerns Jack does, really. I think I'm always worried about a player who's on, It's not his fault he's on a lot more money than we can offer him, right? Not saying it is. But the form, he knows he's never going to play for Newcastle again, right? So basically he's looking for a club, rightly. We've given him opportunity with obviously paying very little. So is your performance level, yes, so good to really impress in this period, then you can naturally take your foot off the gas if we sign you. I still have this feeling that Norwich fans thought he was absolutely useless. They saw him for a whole season. Now, I think at Championship level, someone can be really good for one team and they can be absolutely useless for another. It doesn't necessarily mean a huge amount. Like talking about Dykes earlier, I think he could go to another team, and if they played to his style, I think he could get 10 to kind of 12 goals for a different team. But for us, it just hasn't happened. So, the Johansson element, whilst I think Jeff Cameron was good on his loan spell, when even after that, I thought Cameron was decent for us. They did get to a point where we're like, God, we really need to move you on. So are we just going through that kind of motion again? It's difficult. If it's on £40,000 a week, so what are we going to offer? It's going to be a quarter of that at the max, probably. So does he know that? And he's like, okay, well, I'll be milking Newcastle for whatever, and then I know what my level is now. I don't know. Difficult.
I think it's difficult. I think, especially where we are as a football club, it's going to be difficult to avoid giving people contracts like that. You just need to be getting them more wrong, right than wrong. I always think there's going to be players that are going to do that, you're going to want to move them on, or they're going to get to a point where their age kicks in and stuff like that. It depends on, but depends if you get them on the right deal, I guess. But I would take him, but I certainly wouldn't break the bank for him.
What we pay in Begovic, that's high end 20s, isn't it?
I don't think anyone really knows.
I can't imagine we're paying anybody 20s. We just don't have the numbers for that.
I think we're heavily on bonuses, aren't we? We rely heavily on giving people bonuses and stuff. I think I think Begovic, Kolbak, and Cook are probably got the highest wage in the squad.
Ainsworth Generals.
Yeah. I mean, that's the best thing Ainsworth did, didn't it? Bringing in Cook. Someone mentioned it online. Let's kind of agree.
That position, didn't we? Where we were absolutely horrific versus Watford, and we were like, okay, well, that extra X amount you want, Cook. Suddenly we found it.
Exactly that, mate.
But look, now we spent 5-10 minutes talking about how great he's been. So yeah, that works out.
See, because you might have said this about difficult. Cook, mightn't you, last year? Would you have given him a 2-year deal? I think we said it earlier points when we weren't very good.
The difference was that Cook has been playing for teams, hasn't he? Like, he's not, like, Hayden's not been playing for Newcastle. Like, Cook was playing for Forest a bit. Like, it's only because they have so many players at Forest that he then got phased out. Like, they've had a squad of, like, 50 players. That's why they're in FFP trouble. Like, I'd like Hayden, but, like I said, like we've all said, it's whether or not you break the bank for him. And I'd rather break the bank for someone who's going to score us 15 goals.
Where'd you find one of them, mate?
Exactly.
The counterpoint I would have for what you just specifically said, we mentioned it last week, so like Blackburn got a top scorer in the league in Sammy Smodux, but can't kick goals out the other end. Plymouth now a point above relegation, looking as if they are
to
go down. Got Whittaker, like 18 goals. Ryan Hardy's got 12, 13. So, yeah, whilst if, let's say by some, we brought in another kind of free striker like a Frey, but we signed Hayden, it's not the sexy thing to talk about, but it might have more of an impact on the pitch. But
like we've got Field, we've got Kolbak. Like as much as Hayden's been brilliant for us, those two aren't terrible. And we could get a younger, like defensive midfielder in, come in and play a few games and grow and be good in a couple of years' time whilst getting that striker in.
Field is a better centre back than he is CDM. I think he possibly is a better eight. a better, like, I don't know. I've seen a resurgent in him, and I feel when he's got a bit more freedom to move about a bit, which Hayden gives him, I feel like we get a better field. Just a personal view, especially over the last few games. I think he's been brilliant. I think he reads the game really well in that middle of the park. His interception is there, and he can make the 5 yards. He's very good over 5 yards when and that's all you really need in that centre midfield. I think that Hayden has given us a better field in more of that eight role.
I agree.
Is my observation. I thought he was excellent yesterday, field, by the way. Again, not amazing, didn't do anything outstanding, but just keeping the ball and, you know, doesn't lose a tackle often and just recycling the ball and I just thought he was excellent.
It felt like he was always in the right place. Like he seemed to be when just clearing up the mess all the time, like just putting out those little fires, nothing drastic, just someone like lost control of the ball. He was there, like they're about to have a counter-attack. He seemed to be there.
Like a Suchek type player. I'm not like he's not a CDM, is he? He gets in the box, but he's like he's quite big and like I don't know. Maybe there's something in there. I don't know. Field can play CDM, but if we could find someone else to play there, then we should. In my eyes,
go on.
No, I was going to say I've always thought Field's got goals in him. I think like he gets into good positions and he's a good threat in the box as well. Like, he's chipping in with some goals. He's got a few assists, a couple of knockdowns that have led to goals. I think he's got it in him to get, 5 to 7 goals a season. If he plays in that eight role, and I agree with you, I think he's let him loose, let him around the pitch because he's got the ability to get across the pitch side to side. I think his passing is notably improved on, this calendar year. I think he's trying more. I think he's trying to unlock with he's sweeping the ball from left to right. I'm generally quite impressed with what he's been doing on the ball, whereas before I thought he was playing within him. He had that run where he was playing so much and he looked like he was knackered and he was playing within himself. The passing wasn't really working. Looked a bit out of sorts, but he's really come alive again. And I like the Hayden Field dynamic for the reasons you've said. I like that Hayden holds position, and he keeps that sort of grounding in the middle and then Field is sort of buzzing around. I think that works really well. I think Colback's been quite useful. I'm not sure I could trust if you can trust him over a 46-game season through suspensions and injuries. So that's why I think it's quite important to have a Hayden in that sort of midfield options as well next season. But, there is definitely potential to bring a youngster through or sign a younger centre midfielder to complement those players that you've got, but it's really for the first time in a while, I feel like our centre mid options are winning us games, winning the battles in midfield. We're not getting run over when we've had Dizel in there and others, over the years that have been a bit, lightweight. Like, sometimes you'd feel like we're going to lose that midfield battle. So now I feel like it's one of our strengths.
One thing I didn't mention from the Birmingham game was Colback felt like he got fouled. Ref didn't give it. His instant reaction was to boot someone and get a pointless yellow card. It pissed me off so much because it wasn't 2-1 at that stage. It was 1-1. They were breaking a lot throughout that whole game. And there could have been an opportunity where he needed to take somebody out for a yellow and he screwed himself with absolute petulance. And I don't understand. He's an experienced player, but he does this stupid shit. It's so annoying. And on another day, Jimmy Dunn doesn't score that goal and he hacks someone out and then gets sent off. And that can't happen. Absolutely ludicrous.
I said it to, I think I said it to Ben the other day, we were discussing it. And I said, I liked him. I stuck up for Jack in a conversation about, because I like the fact that he's got that fiery temperament and he isn't afraid to put the boot in. But you're right. Sometimes it is the petulant sticking the boot in and just being angry with it for no reason. Like, he didn't win a foul. Fair enough. That happens a lot. Like, do you know what I mean? So many times throughout a game, you think you fouled, you're not. Just get on with the game. Yeah. Like you said, like he could have easily been in a situation where he was last man and he had to do something. So I agree with that. I just wanted to raise, I was a bit disappointed with Hodge against Swansea. Got his start, and I just don't think he really did much.
he's not
justified being back in, to be justified being back in the team.
He was a bit further forward, wasn't he? And he doesn't look comfortable up there. He doesn't. I think he said himself he sees himself as a bit more of a defensive midfielder. I think he said it when he was on Irish duty, didn't he? It's difficult for him, isn't it? Just coming in here and there and everywhere. It's you know, big games as well for us that mean a lot. And he's, I don't know, I felt that he started at Rotherham and I just thought the occasion got too much for him. I don't know. Would I have him back? Probably not. I've not seen enough of him to think. It's a shame because the Blackburn goal that he did, first touch goal, he sort of promised so much. But I don't know. I'm not sure I would have him back. I don't know about anyone else.
I don't think we really know. Either we don't know where to play him or that will kind of suit other players in the team, i.e. where they need to be first. Because he's going to be one of the last pieces in that jigsaw, right? Because he's a lone player and just there's aspects as to why he plays because we're resting other players rather than we're playing you because you can definitely give us, you are the kind of key to that. Yeah, it's, I think he will be a decent player. I think he'll have a good career, but it's just not one of those. He's had moments for us, great, but yeah, people won't be like, oh, some are desperately getting back on loan. Yeah, one of those.
Just quickly before we move on, Sheffield Wednesday relegation fears. They think the job's done. I think 6 points is not enough, but it would take a lot to happen. I say a lot. You lose Saturday, then you're looking over your shoulder, aren't you, a little bit more? But how many? I think 50 points is probably what we need. 4 points, but we just need to get them as quick as possible, don't we? You don't want to be going on any kind of losing streak, losing two or three in a row, which is a worry.
Yeah, do not lose against Sheffield Wednesday at home.
Nah, take a draw. I'd arguably just take a draw because they're going to be bang up for it.
Exactly, and take a point at Plymouth before. I'd take a point at Plymouth at this point because it just keeps them arm's length a little bit with that cushion. It means they've got to win almost every game between then and after that and the end of the season. So, yeah, I think 50 does it. I think it'd be very difficult for someone in Sheffield Wednesday's position on 39 points to get above 50 points unless they go on another run. I mean, after winning four out of five, they're winless in four. They lost three of those. You know, they failed to score in each defeat. They've scored one goal across those four games. They've hit, you know, a really bad run of form at the wrong time. So the manager was calling out the players in the press conference after the last game, and apparently he hasn't done that. He's always been very supportive of them. So it doesn't sound like it's going too well there. So, yeah, we're not safe, obviously. We know this is QPR. We've seen so much over the years, but I think one win and a draw from six games, I mean, that's doable, isn't it, if we're saying 50 points?
I can't see us not picking up two wins in these last six games. With how the form's gone since Marty's took over, I just think we'll get at least 6 points from these six games. And that should give us, 52 then? Well safe. I think. I hope.
There's a lot of teams below us that have got to get more points than us from now till the end of the season.
Then they're all struggling for form. I can't see any of them getting three or four wins that they like. Some of them need.
Yeah, yeah, but yeah, okay, cool. The Sheffield Wednesday, Saturday, Plymouth Tuesday. Chris, what are you expecting? What formation are you expecting? Any changes? I think. What's the weather going to be like? No, I don't know.
Hopefully a bit sunnier than it has been. I think we will revert back to basically the team that played against Birmingham, dependent upon how Kenneth Powell has kind of recovered / do we go with Fox. I won't have a particular issue with going with Fox. The point you make is that naturally Powell supports Chair in that left wing kind of area a lot. Fox will pretty much be like, well, I'll get to just about the halfway line, maybe 5 yards inside it, and then it's fine, and I will sit. So, but that's probably the only option. I mean, striker, you pick it out of a hat and decide who you fancy that day. Mm-hmm. I imagine we'll probably see Frey again, simply because it's a home game and we're seeing a bit of a pattern here. So, yeah, in terms of, I mean, they've not been great in their last four, but we could really kind of ideally crush their hopes. We beat them whilst, yeah, they are still well involved. That's a big blow to them. So, and it gives us the opportunity to feel more confident about our own safety. We beat one of the teams below us at home, three in a row. You're like, okay, we should be okay from here. The players will be confident, manager, fans, everything. We were in a similar position when we played Borough at home when we were all really confident, but that's a very different team.
Yeah.
We are playing a poor team at the end of the day.
Could you play Lucas Anderson up front as a bit more of a hybrid striker? I don't know. I was thinking about it the other day. I've only just remembered. Could be a completely ridiculous thought. But what you could do then is you could play Smith, Willock and move Chair in. I don't think you'd do it, but I just wonder whether there's something in it.
Well, I was actually going to say, I don't think we've done it too many times to great success, but could you not play Willock as a false nine and have him and Smith sort of rotating in and out of the wide position with like that sort of the energy of Smith?
That's what I kind of mean, like all of them kind of moving about a bit more hybrid. I don't know. Maybe we're just...
You lose a bit of impact off the bench. Mm-hmm. Won a few games off the bench under Cifuentes. Yeah. And I think if you play all your cards at once, you bring on Frey and Dykes, Armstrong, like, are they going to grab you the game? Whereas I actually think Willock and Smith, the way they've been coming off the bench at times, have been really useful. So I think it'll be Frey again, you know, repeat, rinse and repeat at home. I think it'll be a very similar team to the Birmingham lineup if Power's okay to go. I think Willock will come in for Smith to start.
Powell was there, wasn't he? Celebrating on the pitch at Swansea. Yeah. He didn't look too ill. Maybe we just sort of said to it, maybe he was, and he just sort of said, let's sit this one out. So I think he'll be back. I'd still be interested to see if he goes with Fox again, though. Marty's a bit like that, isn't he? If you stick with you if you have a good game.
Yes, Reggie, but... Like we said, like Powell's more attacking, isn't he? We're at home. You feel like you might bring Powell back in just for that element. You think these are like the next two games are the ones you would think on paper are the most winnable. Try and get as many points out of these next two to get us in the best position, and then you could go as defensive as you want.
Yeah.
Would be what I'd do.
Yeah. Fair enough. What are we saying then, predictions wise for them both? What are we saying?
Well, I predicted a win against Birmingham and a loss at Swansea. It wasn't too far. I didn't see a win at Swansea, I must admit. But I think we've got two draws coming up. I'm not sure we're going to... I don't feel as confident against Sheffield Wednesday. They're weird side. And teams on bad runs come to Loftus Road have a habit of, you know, picking up a shock win. But no, again, it's one of those. You have to see how the game develops. But if we can dominate Sheffield Wednesday and really put them under and get that goal, then I think could be in for a happy day. But I think a draw is what I'm going for this one.
Chris, what do you think, mate?
We'll win one of them, at least one of them. Saying, yeah. Ideally, that's the home game versus Sheffield Wednesday, because then there is an element to which a bit less pressure on that Plymouth game. But I don't see any reason as to why we shouldn't be fairly confident in terms of how we're playing and how we're doing. It would just be, yeah, nice to get another home win, but we could just have... I'm crying out for one of these performances by the end of the season to just be a comfortable win.
It's three, like, or 3-0, four, everything all the strikers clicks. Score. Yeah, I was thinking that.
Just one of those. Naturally, that stuff doesn't happen in the predicament we're in, but that to me would be absolutely perfect. We've had the last minute winner, which gives you the unbelievable feeling. But yeah, to really kind of cement ourselves and be like, we are a good team, a comfortable clean sheet, and yeah, kind of the attacking football flows. I'd go for a win, and then I'll say a point. So I'll go 4 points over the two.
Yeah, I think we'll win one or lose one. I always think we keep it. Like, it's too good to be true. Something will knock us back down again. I don't know why. I just think it's going to happen. Like, something like that might happen. But I'd take a win. I'd take 3 points. I'd rather it was against Sheffield Wednesday, but just another 3 points against either of them is fine by me. You know, get fit, even if Sheffield Wednesday did beat us and we could beat Plymouth, they'd still have to win another three or four games after that, which is a big ask for them. But anyway, all right, lads, nice one. Just quick one. I just saw Jake Clark-Salter linked to a lot of Premier League clubs, 5 million. Would you sell him for 5 million?
No, no chance. Double it and come back, yeah.
Chris, wow, you can tell how positive we are.
Oh, it's mad. Some of the things we've said on this pod. Some of the things we've said on this pod, I was thinking that, but at the end of January, start of February, we're in. Anyway, crazy. All right, lads. Thanks for coming on. Everyone, thanks for listening. And let's hope for another result of the weekend. You yours.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.